This is your podcast for all things refinishing. I'm Lane Ball with Zebras Before and After. Welcome to episode 196.
I started working on it, didn't really know what the plan was going to be. I just knew I wanted to do like a weathered pine. And it's probably one of my favorite pieces that I've ever done. It's a little bit out of my normal style, a little more primitive, but I just fell in love with it.
We are celebrating the winners of the September Zebra Review category of hashtag Zebra Desks, and our featured judge, Lauren Schwettino with Portland Rose Studio, will be interviewing Sarah with Pop Salvage, Anna with Raven Street Market, and Lindsay with Rustic Owl Furnishings. We will also have a great panel discussion on selling and marketing your pieces in today's economy. Jenna with Happy Valley Restoration shares a refinishing tip on dealing with bleed through. This week's question of the week, what interesting items have you found in your old furniture pieces, is answered by our furniture refinishing friends Jess with Oak and Grain Refinishing, Kelsey with Mini Furniture Flip, Andrea with Haldeman Vintage, and Melissa with A Life Refurbished. Sarah with Sarah Chin Design gives accolades to Candy with Orchids True Blue. Stay with us, friends. We have the inspiration, fun, and community that will platform your day. As most of you know, the Zebra Review underwent a few exciting changes a couple months ago. We decided to move away from monthly themes like clean and classic and farmhouse style to monthly furniture categories like desks, dressers, buffets, etc. We also decided to have one of our four Zebra judges champion the contest each month by choosing several pieces out of all the entries, and then those pieces chosen would be voted on by the remaining judges. For September, our featured judge was Lauren Schwettino, a Portland Rose Studio, and our category was desks. Another great benefit of this new revamping is that the featured judge appears on the podcast to interview the winners. So without further ado, I welcome Lauren as today's co-host of the podcast. How are you, Lauren?
I'm good. Great to be here.
So you and your husband, man, you just got back from Ireland. What's up with that?
We did. Oh, you know what? Oh my gosh, it was amazing. I had been there many years ago with a school trip, but had never really, we didn't really get out to do a whole lot of stuff. It was a very much like a literary academic tour. And so I had always dreamed of going back. So for the past like 4 or 5 years, we've just been literally saving like $20 a week to go for our 10-year anniversary. So yeah, it was our 10-year anniversary trip and it could not have been more perfect. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's funny because I saw those stories that you posted. I'm like, these are like stock images. These aren't Lauren's pictures.
It felt like that. It felt like that. And honestly, we had such good weather. I mean, we had, the forecast was 70 to 90% rain every single day. And we had like one morning of rain. It was honestly just like too good to be true.
Yeah, well, it sounds it. So I got to ask you this question. Did you pick up any like lovely Irish accent mixed in with a Midwestern accent?
Oh, we were hardcore talking like an Irish accent the entire time. I'm sure we were getting funny looks because we probably sounded ridiculous, but
yeah, that's sort of like when people from the North come to the South and they try to drag out their that draw, you know, to sound Southern. And it's like, look it, you're from the North. Don't, you're not, it doesn't pass the test.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. It certainly evident from the pictures. Okay. So you are, of course, the featured judge for September and you championed the category desks. There was a lot of great entries. I suspect you had a difficult time choosing your favorites for the other judges to choose from. Did you feel overwhelmed by the pressure?
No, I wouldn't say overwhelmed, but I mean, it was fun. I think doing it this way, actually in some ways made it less overwhelming because you're kind of comparing apples to apples. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more streamlined and you can kind of focus on just one thing. But holy cow, there was a lot of really, really good entries. So it did make it challenging, but very fun.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear you say that because we certainly value our judges because you guys put a lot of effort into not only supporting and promoting the contest, but also making those tough decisions. And so when we did this, you know, the idea was to, as you said, streamline it, make it more efficient for you guys. But then also, I love the fact that you can pull up the hashtag Zebra Desks if you want some inspiration on some refinished desks, and you can see a whole bunch of them. And so the same thing, of course, with this month is chest, Zebra chest. Mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting as well. Well, we are excited to introduce our winners. We're going to have them escorted out of our green room into their recording studio now. A little bit of imagination there. And Lauren, would you do the honors and announce the winners?
Absolutely. So for our first place winner, we have Sarah with Pop Salvage. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, Lauren. Hello, everybody. I'm great. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yes. No, thank you so much. It's such an honor.
And for second place, we have Anna with Raven Street Market. Hi, Anna.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And for our third place winner, we have Lindsay with Rustic Owl Furnishings. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, everybody.
Well, congratulations, yes, to all three of you. Phenomenal job. And we're going to discuss your pieces shortly. But you know what? I feel like we need to have a quick commercial break for a weather report. Is anybody surprised at this? Come on.
Not at all.
So really, this is just a beautiful time of year, right? I mean, I think everybody loves fall. And Lauren is up in Wisconsin. Sarah is in Maryland. Anna's in Minnesota. Lindsay's in Michigan. Well, I'm down here in North Carolina. I mean, I think we have a heavy concentration of north this week. So are you guys, I'm not gonna brag too much because you guys might be able to brag with me, but are you still enjoying fall temps or has it turned cold in your area yet?
In Michigan, it's on and off. Freezing one week. It was super hot this week. It was like 75, 80. Oh. And then it goes right back to cold on tomorrow, actually. But the colors are beautiful.
That's exactly what it's like in Minnesota. It's, I don't know if I can paint indoors or outdoors one day because it'll be 72 and sunny or freezing cold and we have our winter coats out.
Yep.
Same Wisconsin, it's the same. We came back from Ireland and it was snowing. And last weekend it was 70 and today it's cold again. So who knows?
I would say in Maryland it's been pretty classic fall, like 60s. Like low 50s in the mornings and then in the 60s and all the beautiful colors, of course, everywhere right now.
Well, we're not too far off the mark here in the South. It is, well, today though is amazingly beautiful. It's sunny out and I think we're supposed to be in the mid 70s today. So that is like exceptional fall weather. So, but I'm glad to hear that you guys, even though it's kind of like, springing back and forth between cold and warm, at least you're still getting some warm days. So that's good to hear. And I believe Anna said, I don't know whether to work inside or outside. Do you guys find yourself working outside most of the spring, summer, and fall? I mean, as much as you can?
I do. I work in my garage, so it's nice to have the garage door open. And I actually purchased one of those like magnetic netting things to go over the garage door so bugs couldn't get in. That was really nice.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'll have to get that.
Amazon.
Well, we are eager to discuss your pieces, but before we do that, I just want to let our listeners know the flow of the show. Lauren will ask a few questions of each of our winners about their pieces. Of course, others may also comment and ask questions as well. I will lob in one of my fun out of nowhere questions for each winner. Basically, these are questions that have nothing to do with refinishing. By the way, each guest will receive a different question. So that means you can't think about what your answer will be ahead of time. That's part of the fun, right?
Right.
All right. So, well, after we discuss your pieces, we'll have a short break and then we'll come back on to have a panel discussion among all four of you on the topic of selling and marketing your pieces in today's economy. So for now, let's dive into your beautiful award-winning pieces. Sarah, you won first place with your antique panel desk. Why don't you describe it for our listeners and then give us an overview of what you did to it. And then Lauren will have some questions for you.
Okay, great. Yeah. So this is a piece I found at an estate auction actually nearby. And I knew right when I saw it that it was special. It had the beautiful original hardware was all in place. It had the really big pine top. And so I started working on it. Didn't really know what the plan was going to be. I just knew I wanted to do like a weathered pine top. And I thought the whole thing was pine, but then once I started sanding down, I realized it wasn't. So I decided to go with milk paint, for the rest of it. and keep the top pine. Milk paint was perfect for it. It just fits so well with that style and the whole look. And so I did like a little bit of a custom mix of some different grays and blacks that I had on hand. And it's probably one of my favorite pieces that I've ever done. It's a little bit out of my normal style, a little more primitive, but I just fell in love with it. And it did finally sell last weekend. So I was surprised it didn't go a little quicker, maybe just because I was so attached to it. I thought everybody else would be as attached. But that's something we could talk about in our discussion, because I think just in general, things aren't moving as quick as we are used to. But yeah, it was a really special piece. And honestly, I didn't mind having it around. Every time I walked by, I had to like stop and look at it. But it had a lot of drawer space. It was just a really unique piece. And I loved that you could also situate it facing the door. So it looked good, you know, from front or back.
You actually, you answered a few of my questions already. I was going to ask you where you found it, because when I saw your piece, I pictured if I had found it and it being one of those pieces where your heart just skips a beat. Yeah, like, did you kind of feel like that?
Yeah. So I actually was trying to get a lot of other pieces in this particular estate auction, and I ended up losing out on all of them, and nobody bid on it, which I was shocked. I know. And I was so happy. And so when I got it home, sometimes you don't know until you see it if it's really as great as you think.
Right.
And it was. It was so special. And so, yeah, I got really lucky with that one. I don't know why other people didn't see what I saw, but I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I'm just picturing like a full-on bidding war. That's crazy.
Right.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to say something slightly controversial about your piece. When I saw the before, I fell in love with the before, which, you know, we're kind of both saying, like, we both saw that it was really special. And then when you kind of zoom in, you can see that it had like a lot of scratches and imperfections and that kind of thing. But how do you make that decision to either restore or refinish? You know, I think some people probably would have said, oh, I'll take the scratches. I like the original finish. Mm-hmm. You know, where's that line? Especially, you know, you decided to refinish the top, which I love, and you kept a lot of those imperfections. Yeah. So what is like your process in deciding that?
That's a good question. So I would say, like, typically if you look at other pieces that I usually work on, I like a smooth piece that where everything's filled in and nice and sleek, and that really is my typical go-to look. But this one, it was so old and it had so much character. So I've started opening up a little more to embracing the original character of the piece. Mm-hmm. And I just think that this one was so special that I had to do that. When I sanded down the top, I did pretty much leave it as is, as far as I didn't fill any holes. In fact, I unfilled some holes. When I sanded it down, I noticed that they had originally filled a bunch of holes, and I took out the filler because it didn't match, like it was like pink. And so I took it out and just like embraced the nail holes. And I kind of went with it as it just what felt right. I didn't do a lot of pre-planning, with it. And I have seen, especially this last year, a lot of the beat up pine pieces. And I think I just had that in my head when I found this piece, that I wanted it to kind of be a similar look of that. So that's really what motivated me to go that route. I would say most of the time I go the opposite direction. So a little out of my comfort zone.
Well, I think that's amazing, because I think that you really did preserve that history, but also it feels very, you know, on trend for right now. Right, like you said, with the pine is very in, but it just retains that character and that history in that story. Why did you not go like straight black with it? How did you come up the combination of the different colors?
So that's a good question, honestly, because I didn't have, like, I always think I'm going to run out. And so I had like equal halves of like a dark gray and a black. And so I just mixed those together. And then I thought, oh, I don't want it to be just black. And so I added a little bit of a white milk paint that I had too. I don't know. There was no rhyme or reason to the mix. It was just
Yeah. That's the way I work. So I get it.
Yeah. I was just kind of going with it. I did know that I didn't want it to just be black though. I wanted it to have like just a little bit more dimension to it where like at certain angles it might look black, but then at certain angles it almost looks a little blue. And in certain angles it's definitely a charcoal. I liked that. It's sort of mysterious.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually looking at it right now and yes, exactly that. But I love that that was sort of almost a, not a mistake, but just a, like a byproduct of you experimenting and it, you know, looks like it was really purposeful and intentional. So I love that. And did you do anything with the hardware or is it just?
I did because, so the hardware is just so, it's probably the best hardware I've ever seen, but it was, they're iron. So they're like amazing. And I cleaned them and they just had a lot of rust and stuff. And so I cleaned them up really good. And once I cleaned them up a little bit, I don't know. It just didn't look, it needed a little something more to make them pop a little against the paint and show a little bit more of all those amazing details. So I just did like a light rub and buff. I kind of just played around with it until I thought with one of them until I got it just right with which shade of rub and buff I wanted. And then I just went with that and I didn't overdo it. I just, I didn't even want to over clean them. I just kind of, gave them a normal little clean. I didn't do the whole boiling them and all that. I just kind of got the grime off and then did the rub and buff. And so it gave it just enough of like dimension that you can see the little details on it without making them, you know, too different.
Right. I was kind of looking at the before and after. I'm like, they look slightly different, but I wasn't sure if it was just because it was painted. Because again, it just looks so like natural and it flows together so nicely. Okay, I have one last question, I think. It has nothing to do with the desk.
Oh, okay.
I need to know about the lamp.
I am so glad you brought that up because
I love the lamp.
I have two of those. So there's actually two and they are of clients. I'm actually pre-finishing them for someone. Oh. And I had dropped a piece off to this particular client and she gave them to me like that day that I was staging this desk. And I was like, oh, perfect. This goes really well with this desk. And so I just used them that day for staging. And then now they look nothing like that, by the way. I'm kind of excited to show what they're going to look like. They've had two different, totally different lives. But yeah, they're amazing. She had them hanging in her place. And she has more of a like polished sort of sleek look. And she wanted them like blue with brass, like navy and brass. So they're getting totally redone now. I know. So, but I'm glad I got to have a really good picture of both versions. So.
Right.
But that, that got really original lucky moment with the timing on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fun.
Okay, Sarah, you ready for your fun out of nowhere question?
Oh, God, I'm nervous.
Okay. Oh, these are all intended to be fun. So here's the question. If you had to have lunch with one of these people, who would it be? A, British adventurer Bear Grylls, B, Princess of Wales Kate Middleton, or C, English actress Maggie Smith?
Oh my goodness. Oh.
What's happening?
This is a silly question. And why are they all British?
You know what? I don't know. That's what was so interesting is I was like, how did we end up with all British people? There was no intention with that. But maybe it's my own slant. I don't know.
I think I have to go with the princess.
Really?
I don't know. I love a nice like high tea. I could see that be, I'm from Texas and we used to always do like high teas in the South. And I would love to like just sit and have like tea and little tea sandwiches with her and then get all the gossip, you know, the royal gossip.
Well, you just made my 17-year-old daughter very happy because she loves to follow Kate Middleton. So that was the right answer in her book.
Okay, good.
So that's great. All right. So Sierra can be reached on Instagram at Pop Salvage. Congratulations, Sierra. You did a phenomenal job. And so we're excited for it. And I hope the owner of the desk knows that you won first place. Next up is Anna with Raven Street Market. She won second place with her Pottery Barn inspired printer's desk. Describe and tell, Anna, and then Lauren will have some questions for you.
Yeah, so this piece was actually created for myself. We have a little nook upstairs in our home that holds our computer, and it's 6 feet wide. And I wanted a desk that would fit that space just perfectly, almost like a built-in. The desk that we currently had there was just one of those press board junky desks, and I'm trying to convert everything into our home into something just a little bit nicer now, given my profession. So I was on Marketplace, Facebook Marketplace, just avidly searching for desks, and then this one popped up, and it was actually only $50, and it's it's a very, very solid wood, very heavy. Honestly, I was a little nervous about carrying it up our stairs because it is way heavier than it looks. And I was looking inside, I'm like, is this thing, are there bricks inside, or is it made out of metal, or why is it so heavy? I mean, I've lifted so many buffets and dressers, and this piece was just incredibly heavy, and honestly, I still don't know why. But very solid wood, and the idea for our upstairs, we had just put in some board and batten, and I wanted to go after a Pottery Barn look. There was actually a specific desk that looks almost identical to the finished product of this. And so that was where the concept came from. And with that, a lot of people always wonder with that raw wood look, do you need to sand it down? And it's like, yes, absolutely. Because when you're going with a raw wood or just a weathered wood look, you have to get back to that wood grain. So the entire piece was fully sanded, the top, the sides, the legs, and it's a mahogany. Mahogany is a pretty red wood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to take just like a cream or a tan colored paint and wash it over the top, and when I say wash, I mean the paint is actually mixed in with water to basically create a stain versus a solid paint color. So the paint was mixed with water, and if you were to take like a cream or a tan color and wash it over, it's just going to turn pink.
Right.
I'm sure many of you guys, you know, mm-hmm. you're aware of that, but you know, if you combine red with white, it just makes pink. So to neutralize that pink, I know a lot of people do the bleaching method. I've done that too. But with this piece, I didn't want to dry out the wood because it is a veneer in some places. And I did a green wash with just like a light green paint. So the paint was mixed in with water, and that green wash neutralizes the red tone. Strangely so, but that's just how it works. Because mm-hmm. It's a little scary putting green over your piece when you're not going for green. And so the red tones were neutralized with green. And then after that dried, then I went over it with the color that I was trying to achieve, which was just like an off-white or a natural wood color. And then from there, I wanted to warm it up just a little bit. So I used a brown glaze and rubbed that right into the paint and then wiped it back. And then, of course, sealed the whole piece with poly so that it's protected. And the poles, I put on new poles. It actually had really cool original knobs on it, and I loved them, but I was going for that Pottery Barn look mm-hmm. almost for fun, just to try and match it. So I just found some cut poles on Amazon and popped those on.
Well, you guys are really thorough, and you're stealing all of my questions. but honestly, the thing that caught my attention first, I think, on your piece just was the size and how unique it was. And especially you have that picture of it, I think, in your garage before you did anything. And it's like taking up like a huge amount of space. So how, you said your space was 6 feet. So does it take up an entire like 6 feet?
It does. So I had to measure multiple times. I'm like, is this actually going to fit? Because I didn't want to haul it up the stairs and not have it fit. And so, right. you know, and walls aren't always straight. So the beginning of the wall, the front of the wall, it fits. But then if you put the tape measure back a little, it's maybe, you know, an eighth of an inch less. And I'm like, oh gosh, I just had to try it. So it was finished. We brought it up the stairs and try to fit it in this nook, but next to the nook at a 90 degree angle is the bedroom door, and the trim is, you know, a quarter inch thick, and that mm-hmm. made it impossible to get the desk into the space because of the trim. I hadn't accounted for the trim. So my husband had to take the trim off of the door frame to get the desk in and then put the trim back on. So technically it is built in.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I can really relate to that. And so can my husband.
Yeah.
I make him do all sorts of crazy lifting and moving, and then I don't measure right. And then he's the one who has to fix my mistake. So I'm sure there are plenty of people who can relate to that. That struggle. And then you already answered one of these questions, but I was going to ask if you had seen the Pottery Barn piece first or if that was something that came later. But how cool is that? That, I mean, it really looks and feels so much like your inspiration piece. The odds of that is crazy. And for $50, considering, I can't imagine how much the Pottery Barn was, but.
I think the Pottery Barn piece, I think it was like $1,500.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I found the desk first, and it sat in my garage for a little bit, because I usually put work for us last. I try to, you know, produce mm-hmm. things for other people. But I think what happened is I had the desk, and then through the ads on Facebook or Instagram, this Pottery Barn desk popped up.
Okay.
And I said, oh my gosh, it looks just like my desk.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I love that finish. Let's go for it.
Wow. And like, what a testament that is to being able to do things on your own, or just having, you know, kind of the courage, you know, for anybody to just try it. I mean, for $50.
Absolutely.
You know, to get something that looks like a mass produced something that you could pay $1,500 for, and now you have a one-of-a-kind, super solid, super heavy, you know, piece. I think that's kind of amazing.
Right. And you know what? In the end, it's just paint.
Right.
I think people are so scared to paint sometimes, and as long as your surface is clean, I mean, that mm-hmm. is even more important than the painting part, is it has to be clean. Clean it up and then scuff sand it, or it's just paint, and if you screw up, it does come off.
I'm just curious about hearing more about the greenwash, because I don't think that I've ever actually seen people do that before. And I mean, I get the concept, like I do my makeup thing now and people have redness in their skin, and we recommend, you know, something with like a greenish tone in it to cancel that out. So it makes perfect sense to me. But like you mentioned, it also would make me really nervous. So have you done this before? Have you seen other people do it, or this was just something you were kind of experimenting with?
So actually, General Finishes, they mm-hmm. have a green dye stain. And so many times, you know, I've been trying to stain oak gray and it just comes out pink every time. Mm-hmm. And on their General Finishes University page on Facebook, one of the admins on there had recommended taking their green dye stain. It's like, it's a green dye. It's just like watery green in a can, and mm-hmm. you mix it with polyurethane, just a water-based poly, and you only put 5% of this green dye into the poly. And then when you put that over your piece, it cancels out the reds. And that was what I had first tried, as I put this, you know, green tinted poly. And it is so scary when you first try it, because, you know, if you've sanded down a whole piece, that takes a ton of work.
Right.
And then I applied the green tinted poly over the first time I tried it, I can't remember if it was oak or mahogany, but they both have red tones. And when I applied it, you know, it looks green when you're first brushing it on, and it's like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Right.
But then once it starts to dry or soak in a little bit, the red plus the green just turns into like a orange or a light brown.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't see the green anymore. It's right. an illusion, I suppose. So that's where the idea came from. And then from there, instead of, because I like to do those paint washes on raw wood, you don't want to seal it with a poly,
mm-hmm.
you know, with green dye and poly, you don't want to steal the wood, because then the wash can't soak in.
Right.
So I thought, well, what if instead of using this green poly, if I just do a green paint wash? And I tried it and it worked.
It looks so natural.
Okay, Anna, here's your fun out of nowhere question. If you had to do one of the following, what would you do? A, bungee jump off of the Rio Grande Gorge Bridge in New Mexico. It's over 600 feet high, by the way. I believe that translates to a 42-story building, roughly. B, skydive from a plane. Or C, sing a solo on a stage in front of 100,000 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you need anything
okay,
repeated?
Honestly, I would rather... No, I would rather jump from a high height than sing in front of people solo on a stage. Now, if I am in my house or at Target or something, I will sing all day long. But to be put on a stage, that is what my nightmares are made of.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We didn't intend that. So now you're down to A, bungee jumping and skydiving.
Oh, my gosh. Do I trust a cord or do I trust a parachute? upside down, or I guess, I think I might skydive.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't want to go upside down. Like, isn't bungee jumping, you have to go head first?
I've never done it, but most of the ones I've seen, I think they jump off and then they end up, their feet are at the top and their heads down. I could be wrong, but I think that's the way.
Yeah. I think I'd prefer to skydive because then at least I can pretend I'm flying or something.
Okay. All right. See how much we learn about each other through these wonderful questions?
Funny.
Never did I think I'd say I want to skydive, but in that case, yes.
Yeah, when you get those three choices, that comes up, right? All right. Anna can be reached on Instagram at Raven Street Market. Congratulations, Anna.
Thank you so much.
Our third place winner is Lindsay with Rustic Owl Furnishings. Lindsay, I believe you stated that this piece was pretty rough when you purchased it. Describe and tell, and then Lauren will have a few questions for you.
Yeah, this piece, it was a Facebook Marketplace find. Actually drove out to the middle of nowhere for it, and I don't know if anybody's ever picked up a piece and you thought, like, oh, this is the day I'm gonna leave this earth, but sometimes they're a little sketchy. But no, the guy was really nice, but it was really rough. I don't know if his kids shot BB guns into it, but there was, I think when I counted, there was like 26 BBs in the top of this desk. I know. And I was really sad about it because I like to leave the tops wood if I can. They're more durable than being painted. But yeah, it was rough and it needed a lot of veneer work. So it was, yeah, very bad. Probably the roughest piece I've worked on in a while.
So I have to know my very first question. So looking through your pieces and your style, it feels very familiar to me, to my own. Like, I think you do a lot of very classic, very clean, a lot of like neutral colors. So how in the heck did this end up purple?
Well, I've never used purple before. It's not a color I would ever paint a piece, I didn't think. But Melange Paints came out with this purple, Nevermore was the name of it. And I don't know what it was about it, but I was like, I have to have this color. So I ordered it and it was so pretty. And I just thought that this desk was super dainty, I guess, and it had a lot of pretty details to it. So I thought that it should be a more girly color. So that's how it became purple. But yeah, I always do neutrals something about this purple, I just knew it had to be.
Yeah, it
this
is
color.
A really pretty purple. Like it seems like it has a lot of like blue and gray undertones to it. So it almost feels kind of neutral. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but yeah, I was looking through my own pieces. I'm like, was I ever gutsy enough to do purple? And I was not. So
was the first one.
So you kind of mentioned how the piece itself kind of led you to pick that color. Is that your normal design process, or do you, like, when you do a piece, do you picture the client that you're making it for, or do you picture the house it's going into, or do you just kind of look at the piece and say it wants to be this color?
Yeah, usually I see a piece wherever I'm finding it, marketplace or wherever, and I most of the time I instantly know, like, okay, I'm going to do this. I kind of feel like I do look at the piece and it sort of tells me, that's kind of weird, but it sort of like tells me what color or what it wants to be. There are pieces where it's like really hard to decide, and then most generally I will go white just because I know that sells. But usually I can just sense it in a way that this piece is going to be this color. And
So how long did the prepping actually take on this piece compared to the painting, since it needed so much work?
I think I spent roughly over 3 days fixing it up. I had to pull a lot of veneer off, and then filling all those tiny little holes in the top, and there was just holes and gouges in the whole, you know, the whole thing. So it just took a while to prep it, because I didn't want it to be rustic either. I wanted it to be sleek. So there was just a lot of filling to do after I, you know, pulled veneer off, and grain filling, because when you pull the veneer off, it's not smooth anymore. You have generally rougher wood underneath the veneer. And so I did have to grain fill that, so the wood grain didn't show through the paint as well.
And I mean, it looks so smooth. So you did an amazing job. Did you brush paint that, or was that spraying?
I spray.
Boo, hiss, boo, hiss.
Am I allowed to ask that question?
No, you're allowed. I always make that reaction.
I know, as I was asking, and I was like, oh no, I'm going to get in trouble.
No, I love my zebra brushes.
Thank you. Thank you.
And then you used the original hardware on this?
I did. I did have to change the two, the two top handles, because I didn't have enough of the original poles, because one was missing. So I used the original hardware on most of them, and then I have a stash, a huge stash, probably an embarrassingly amount of old hardware that, you know, I'm going to use on another piece, but it's just becoming a huge mess. So I found some that actually went really well, and I just sprayed them all gold to match. And
I was going to ask if you, like, cleaned them to be that color. That answers my question, because they look great.
Thanks.
And then one final comment, not a question. I really, really love your wallpaper.
Oh, I know. It's so fun. I get tons of comments on it, and people are always messaging me asking where I got it, and I was actually really shocked that my husband let me put that up, to be honest. Because it's kind of out there, but it's just really pretty. It's just black and white. And I was lining a drawer with it, and I was like, man, this would be really pretty on this wall. And I was like, would you care if I put this up? And he was like, do it. And so the next day I had it up, because I'm like, I'm not going to let him change his mind. That's funny.
So Lindsay, that is not a staging wall then. I mean, you use it for staging, but that's in your home?
Yeah, that's in our dining room. So I had my husband or my son help me carry pieces from the garage to the dining room and stage there. It's kind of a process.
Okay, Lindsay, you ready for your fun out of nowhere question?
I think so.
Okay, here it is. If you had the opportunity to go hiking, would you choose to, A, hike the Appalachian Trail, which starts in Georgia and runs all the way to Maine? You wouldn't have to hike the whole way. or B, hike somewhere in the Rocky Mountains, or C, your local park?
Oh, this is a way easier question.
I guess I would... We have done hiking in the Smoky Mountains before. But that was crazy. That was like 8 miles of pure torture. We were not prepared for that.
Was it a trail, or was it just like in the woods?
It was a trail to like a waterfall. And mm-hmm. it was supposed to be a 2-mile trip, but my husband chose one that, you know, accidentally chose one that was 8 miles.
We had no water and no snacks because we were not prepared for that. We ended up drinking out of the river in hopes that we didn't die because we were so thirsty.
Oh my god.
But so I would much rather hike at my local park. Okay. That is so funny.
I think you got a little jeering from the other participants because your question was just a little bit easier.
Yeah. It's like she didn't have to put her life at risk. You know,
right. Any, yeah. Well, maybe she doesn't bring water or snacks.
I guess so.
That's right. Plus, aren't there grizzlies in the Rocky Mountains? I mean, that's come on.
True. An angry moose.
Oh, goodness. That's right. All right. Well, Lindsay can be reached on Instagram at Rustic Owl Furnishings. Congratulations, Lindsay.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break now to hear from our sponsor.
Hi, my name is Eliana with Why Not Redesign, and this podcast is sponsored by my friends at Zebra. Why do I use Zebra brushes? Well, they are extremely smooth and have 25% more filaments in each brush, which provides me with maximum pickup and release of paint. They also have a great variety of them. For example, I use the round because of its simple design and great coverage, but it's so much easier to get into rounded surfaces with it. The square is perfect for cutting into drawer sides and insets. And the Palm Pro fits so comfortably in the palm of my hand, which gives me more control for easier painting. They are also affordable and very accessible. You can find them at big box stores and at craft stores alike. So to me, Zebra brushes are made for my hands and not the other way around, and that's why I love them.
Thank you so much, Eliana, for sharing about your experience with Zebra paintbrushes. We so value our customer friends. Selling and marketing your furniture in a tough economy can be challenging to say the least, but there are options, thankfully, that can help you boost your business and give you more of an assurance that what you refinish will ultimately sell. Our panel discussion today will evolve around this topic and will be discussed by our judge and three winners. Basically, a casual conversation about what they have found that works and doesn't work, along with some potentially new things they are doing that they are eager to pass on to you. Sarah, Anna, Lindsay, and Lauren, it's all yours.
All right. So this is Sarah. So, you know, with the way of the world right now with inflation and high costs of all our products that we use and things, I think we've all sort of had to think about what we're pricing our pieces at, how we're selling them. I also think, at least I have noticed, my customers have started sort of changing the types of pieces they're willing to spend money on. In particular, I noticed that like smaller pieces are selling very easily and quickly, but people aren't necessarily budgeting for big, large pieces right now for their homes. So I'm curious if you guys have seen or noticed that trend as well. And if you're, you know, adjusting any of the ways you're doing your business to accommodate that. One thing I've specifically noticed is I sell on Marketplace mostly, or really I try to mostly sell on my Instagram, but if it doesn't sell on there, then I list it on Marketplace, and it's been crickets on there lately. Unless it's a small piece, at least that's what I find. So I'm just curious if you guys have different ways where you're selling your pieces or any adjustments that you've been making.
I've raised my prices a little bit, just because the costs have almost doubled on some things.
Right.
Especially shellac, if you guys have heard that. unfortunately, it's the only thing that works on bleed through for me. I haven't found another product that works as well. So it's like biting the bullet to buy that. But I sell my stuff in a store, which I don't know if any of you guys do, but it's nice. They do take a commission. So there's that. But it's like a really, I think I've been selling 10 to 15 pieces a month.
That's great.
But it's just because it's a high traffic, you know, higher end store in like a more well off area in Michigan. Like I have to drive 40 minutes to take my stuff there, but I kind of like go where the money is.
I sell my stuff through Facebook Marketplace and actually Craigslist sometimes. Oh. What I feel as far as what you're saying with the higher price pieces, or which generally just goes with the larger pieces, not selling as much as the smaller pieces. With Facebook Marketplace, it seems to be with their algorithm, if a piece is priced over a certain dollar amount, they just like won't put you in people's feeds, is what it seems like.
I've noticed that too.
Yeah, like if you're, you know, at $590 because it's this buffet or a larger piece, they'll say, well, you're over 300, so we're just not going to show your piece to anybody. But once in a while, if one person just by chance happens to find your piece and they send you a message, it seems like then you'll start getting multiple messages.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I was just talking with another refinisher about that, who had that same experience. Like, she had a piece listed for what she thought was pretty reasonable. I did too. And she finally had somebody message about it offering a lower price and went with it. And then immediately got like five people reaching out that wanted, you know, wanted it for the original price.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
Yeah. Well, what you could do is team up with some friends locally or nationally and just have somebody send a message, say, hey, can you help me out? And send them the listing and have a message. And then maybe it'll boost you up in the algorithm.
I actually do. I'm a member of a Boost Your Furniture Listing Club, which a lot of refinishers are on. And so once you list your piece on Marketplace, you go put it in that group, and then everybody goes and like comments or sends a message to help boost it. I don't know. It's like hard to say whether that works or not. I still wonder about the price point thing. Like, I feel like, and the other thing is it's so secretive. There's no information. So everybody's always guessing at like what the algorithm is or, you know, what the price points are where people see your stuff. So it's a little frustrating. And the other thing is I wish there was a place where we could all sell our furniture that's not, Facebook. And I do think that there's a market for that. I do think we might start seeing some companies pop up that facilitate like the shipping and cater to like designers who are looking for pieces. I really hope in the future that that gets popular, because it might be one thing to have a website like that, but people actually have to have customers that go there to shop. So I hope those type of things get, you know, more popular in the future. I think that would be really great. And I think there's some opportunity there.
Yeah. Have you done Etsy?
I tried Etsy. I don't ship. So I actually sold two pieces locally on Etsy, which was very surprising, but I don't really market on there anymore. Just because I don't want to deal with like the shipping, managing all the shipping stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to ship. I'm terrified that it'll get wrecked during the shipping process. And sometimes your finish is, you know, whether it's glazed or, you know, multi-step process. And if it gets scratched or crunched in a corner, I don't know how to fix that for the customer. You can't just send a replacement.
Yeah, and it just makes me nervous. And, like, also that there's a cure time. And if it ships before the cure time, like, I would just go crazy. I just know. Mm-hmm. Personally, my anxiety would be through the roof.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking. Like, I take my stuff 40 minutes away in the trailer, and I'm freaking out the whole ride there.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to stop and look and make sure everything's fine. And there's, like, no relaxing that entire trip until we get there and everything's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, shipping would scare me.
Yeah, like, in a perfect world, it would be, like, some kind of website where we could all, or like an independent marketplace where we could all like list our pieces, and there was like a dedicated shipper or something, and it was all facilitated for us and we wouldn't have to worry about it. Wouldn't that be great?
Right.
But I do think there are some coming out similar to that. I just don't know if they're going to get enough traction to have like enough customers on there shopping for pieces like that. But I do think we have, you know, a big advantage in the sense that when people are shopping for furniture at big box stores, the wait, I mean, I was looking at dining chairs the other day for myself, and it was like, I couldn't get them until March. So I think that I've been trying to kind of market my pieces like that too. Like, oh, you could have this in your house by the end of the weekend. You don't have to wait, you know, 3-4 months to get your piece for your nursery or whatever.
And it's not cardboard, it's wood.
And I was, you know, I was just thinking too, you know, we're talking about inflation and prices going up and how, you know, we can maybe look at that as a negative. But on the flip side of that, are we going to see a growth in this market because of like pieces like Anna's piece where someone can't afford the $1,500 piece anymore, but they might be able to afford a $500, $600 desk. And, you know, and so maybe some of these like new sites can kind of capitalize on that where it still feels very like upscale and one of a kind and curated, and you're still getting that, you know, that clientele that that you have to deal with the marketplace stuff, you know?
And I think that like the problem with marketplace is that people are sort of looking at it like a garage sale type transaction. Yeah. And it'd be even great if marketplace could come up with like a luxury category or, you know, like a different category. Maybe you'd get different types of buyers. I don't know. But yeah, I agree. That is one of the silver linings that could come out of all of this. And
scammers on there have been relentless.
Oh, that's the other thing. It's like, I was talking with other people. I think all the scammers sort of left Craigslist and now have all migrated to Marketplace.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's so it's ridiculous. I list a piece and then I think I have like 10 scammer messages instantly.
Yeah.
And just be grateful they're boosting you up and out. Maybe
some people. That's true.
At least there's that.
Kind of. With people looking at Marketplace, like a garage sale, and then with marketing, I think it is so important to have your pieces staged. And, you know, good lighting that shows the accurate color and have it staged with the right accessories, whether it's something that's trendy these days or just for its use. You know, for a hutch, those can be used in the kitchen, but they can also be used as a linen closet.
Right.
And to stage it different ways, because if your piece is photographed professionally, they are more than likely willing to pay that extra amount beyond garage sale prices, just because they can see that, well, if this picture looks like this, they obviously care about the piece and they must have put a lot of work into it. So that's a way to just get a little more for your piece, is to market it properly.
Right. I agree.
And that was, that kind of leads into what my next question was going to be, is that do you guys feel sort of that added pressure, like on Instagram, to have to do a reel to show your piece? And do you feel like that actually helps in the sales of your pieces, or does it just help with Instagram? Do you know what I'm saying? Does it, does like the boost in Instagram actually translate to sales?
With Instagram, you know, it used to be just the photos. And like you're saying, now as far as the reels go, I mean, if I scroll, it's reels, 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 reels. And so I've actually taken my still photos before and created a reel, kind of like a slideshow, just to see, like, well, maybe it'll put me in someone's feed if I make it into a reel. And then another thing with Instagram is I think it's important to hashtag your closest city. Like for me, it would be Minneapolis or St. Paul.
Right.
To get the local people buyers in your area. Or I'll do hashtag Minnesota small business.
Right. I do all those local ones. Even the mom ones, like Bethesda Moms. I love the mom ones. I feel like I get a lot of buyers from the mom. The moms are always shopping for furniture. But I feel like as far as the pressure to do reels, I do, I have felt that pressure. I try to do one reel per piece, like as long as it's still available. And I usually do that last, like I'll do a a couple posts maybe, and then like finally I'll get around to doing a reel if it hasn't sold yet. But I don't know. I can't tell if it's actually helping me sell pieces really like locally, or I think more people see them in my stories, honestly. Local people, at least, they see me working on it, or, and they reach out before it's done, or I'll put like in my stories that it's available and put like a little box for them to DM me. And that's where I actually feel like I get the most buyers. on Instagram versus like a reel. I think a reel, I think more people outside my area see them than local.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm really trying to sell a piece, I don't know how much they really help.
I think it's just for fun. I don't really see it being like a selling thing. It's just, that's what people see. So that's, you know, you have to join in or, you know, or not, I guess, but.
But you can always do like she, like it was Anna that said she just does her picture, like does like a slideshow. Yeah. Sometimes I do that too. Yeah. Cause I don't always have like time to do a video or I have so many holes in my wall, my staging wall. That you can't, you know, paintbrush out of your
I can't edit them out. It drives me crazy
or something like that. So I'll do that too a lot, where I just do like a little slideshow.
Well, you guys, speaking of reels, I think that it's probably true that reels do boost your account and help you to grow. But I would think with respect to selling furniture, if you're in a big city, it would probably help. Or if you ship your pieces, then it would probably help more. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge that is, and I know you guys have touched on that, is shipping so that you broaden your customer base, especially if you're in a smaller town where, you know, you feel like you've sort of saturated the market and you need to reach out and beyond that. So, well, really helpful conversation on an incredibly, incredibly important topic. I mean, you guys are doing incredible work. I know the whole refinishing community, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into refinishing these pieces, and obviously the end goal is to sell them. And so it's something that we need to continue to have discussions on, is to like the best ways to go about selling your pieces so that you can stay in business. Well, thank you, Lauren, for co-hosting. You always do a phenomenal job with everything you tackle.
Thank you. I was very nervous, as you know. You make it look so easy, Lane. It's not.
And congratulations, Sarah, Anna, and Lindsay. You've all created beautiful works of art with your winning desk.
Yeah, I just want to say all the desks, I'm very impressed with all of them. Yeah, I would have all of them in my home. Yeah, I don't know how you judge that.
Me either.
Yeah, I can just imagine. And I know it was open up like not just a month, like 6 months or back. So I'm sure it was a hard, hard thing to do. And I'm just like really honored that I'm in this group with you ladies.
You guys all did amazing, amazing work. So thank you for making my job more difficult, but more fun.
Well said, Lauren. That was great. All right. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today. And I know you guys have lots to do. So I guess I'd say get back to refinishing, right?
All right.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
Today's refinishing tip comes from Jenna with Happy Valley Restorations.
Hi, this is Jenna Rossi. I am owner of Happy Valley Restorations. And my tip for refinishing is, if you have a piece that once is sanded is bleeding through when you go to paint it white, you can use a spray shellac over it and you should stop the bleed. You might have to do a couple applications, but once you put the white paint over the spray shellac, once it's dried, you should have no more bleed through.
Thank you, Jenna. Nothing worse than painting a piece and seeing bleed through. This is definitely one solution that will stop bleed through in its tracks. Today's question of the week is, what interesting items have you found in your old furniture pieces? There is so much history that comes with an old piece, and to hear what you all are discovering adds to the story of each piece, some positive and others not so positive. Take a listen.
Hi guys, it's Jess with Oak and Grain Refinishing. Probably the coolest thing I've ever found in a piece of furniture was an old newspaper article from probably the really early 1900s based on when this particular piece was built. The problem was it was adhered to the bottom of the drawer and I couldn't get it out with Goo Gone or heat gun kind of products. So I ended up just sanding it down smooth and leaving it as a token of character. Well, my client loved it so much, she later brought me a Cedar Lane chest to refinish as a commissioned piece, and she requested I do the same kind of adhered on look for the certificate that came with the chest. It was so cool. I ended up just gluing it down and then sanding it down lightly to kind of give it that aged look. So maybe consider just leaving those little tokens of character in your next furniture piece.
Hey, it's Kelsey from Any Furniture Flip here. Some interesting items that I have found in a piece that I was refinishing were a passport, birth certificate, and other forms of identification. Fortunately, I was able to get in contact with the original owner and have all of these items returned.
Good morning, Zebra community. This is Andrea from Haldeman Vintage here in Ontario, Canada. The question I was asked is, what kind of items have you found left behind by the previous owners in the furniture that you have been refinishing? Well, some of those items can be pretty racy is what I have found. Recently, I located underneath a drawer an old 1980s porn magazine. I've also found wills. I've found some old, beautiful pictures. Lots of really interesting things have been found that slip in behind old furniture.
Hello, Melissa here from Alive Refurbish. An interesting item I have found in my old piece is a welcome booklet from St. Andrew's Hospital that is the size of my hand. Keep in mind that my husband is a nurse, so that made this finding even more special. I like to read you two sentences from the welcome booklet. It says, "You may have special nurses if you desire. Special nurses are on duty for 8 hours. Rates for special nurses are $5 for 8 hour service. These to be paid directly to the nurse and not to the hospital." After talking with my husband, we thought, how have times changed where nurses used to be paid by their patients directly? Shout out to all the nurses. Thank you for having me, Zebra.
Thanks, Jess, Kelsey, Andrea, and Melissa. If you have a general question you would like asked among your refinishing peers, send me an email at lane@enjoyzebra.com. If we answer your question on the podcast, you'll receive a free Zebra paintbrush. Accolades is defined as an acknowledgement of merit. Welcome to one of our newer podcast segments called, well, Accolades. We wanted to give refinishers the opportunity to give accolades to their fellow refinishers that they admire for their extraordinary refinishing skills and hard work. This week's accolades are given by Sarah with Sarah Chen Design.
Hello, my name is Sarah from Sarah Chen Design. I would like to give the accolade to my furniture friend, Candy Jamieson. I have been following her for a while and really impressed with her creativities. Recently, Candy was inspired by a piece of beautiful dress, and she hand-painted a French dresser with the pattern she saw from the dress, which is kind of like a blue and green ombre with floral and leaves pattern. It's incredible. If you haven't checked her out, please give her a follow. Her Instagram account is called Orchid True Blue.
Thanks, Sarah, and accolades, Candy. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Zebra's Before and After Furniture Refinishing Podcast. Today's episode, along with information about today's guest, is also featured on enjoyzebra.com under the podcast tab at the bottom. Your comments and suggestions for future episodes are always welcome, and we encourage you to share them by sending your emails to me at laneball@enjoyzebra.com. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and happy refinishing.